Good morning and welcome to this episode of Step Into the Light. I am your host, Patty Sheen. Thank you for listening. On this show, we introduce listeners to people who have found their way out of the dark shadows of life and back to light, and those who, through various ministries and creative endeavors, lead others on their journey from darkness to light. Education has developed throughout American history, from the passing of the first compulsory education laws in Massachusetts in 1852 to modern-day choices that range from public education to online courses, with several options in between. It is a parent's responsibility to determine which choice will most adequately meet their child's needs. Although many parents enroll their children in the public education system for 12-plus years, they can contribute much to this acquisition of information and formation of ideas. The preservation of family memories and traditions is a vital element of this learning process. My guest today, Becky Van Fleet, is a retired teacher, principal, and former homeschool mom. She received her bachelor's degree in elementary education from David Lipscomb University in Nashville, Tennessee, and her master's degree from Indiana University, also in elementary education. She has taught school in Indiana and in Colorado. During a period when she was a stay-at-home mom, she homeschooled two of her daughters for 6 years. Becky retired from a well-known charter school, the Classical Academy in Colorado Springs. She taught there for several years and served as principal of the K-8 cottage school program, the homeschool arm of the academy. Becky is the author of the children's picture book, Talitha, the Traveling Skirt, and has recently started a blog. Her theme emphasizes how important it is to connect from one generation to the next, especially through creating and preserving memories. She and her husband make their home in Colorado Springs, where Becky enjoys oil painting, gardening, and hiking and biking in the great outdoors. She relishes spending time with her family and especially reading books to her grandchildren. Good morning, Becky, and welcome to the show.
Good morning, Patty. I'm looking forward to my time with you this morning.
Well, it's such a pleasure to have you here, Becky. You spent a good deal of your career in the field of education. Were there childhood influences you believe that motivated you to choose that particular field of work?
You know, Patty, as I think about this, I would have to say that my third grade teacher, Mrs. Scoville, was one of my first influences. I don't know if you remember these books or not, but I have such fond memories of her reading the Henry Huggins books by Beverly Cleary and the Betsy and Mr. Kilpatrick books by Carolyn Haywood every day after lunch to our whole class, and I just really looked forward to this time. And Mrs. Scoville was a very kind and gentle teacher, and I was very motivated to please her. I would have to say all the way through high school, I had many influential teachers along the way, but Mrs. Scoville still has a special place in my heart today. And then, Patty, I would also share that the summer before I started fourth grade, I actually started my own little school, if you can believe that. I gathered up my young friends in my neighborhood during the summer, and I asked them to come over so I could play school. And, of course, I got to be the teacher. And I can remember gathering up coloring books and paper and pens and scissors and starting my own school at the age of 9. And I really think that was the time that I felt a tug to become a teacher. And I will never forget how when I said school's over and I think we would just play, but I would gather up my books and my materials, and my mother actually found a special place in our kitchen for me to keep these things. And that's just a real special memory.
Oh, how neat. Well, actually, that's pretty cool that you engaged your friends. Most people, it's their stuffed animals.
I got the real kids.
That is so neat. Becky, what would you say in your years as an educator, both as a teacher and a principal, maybe that's kind of a broad spectrum question, but what brought you the most satisfying personal rewards during your career?
Okay, Patty, I would have to say hands down that my most satisfying personal reward was seeing my students succeed and gain confidence in their efforts. Their their successes might be big, they might be small, but I always felt good that I could impact their lives and encourage them. You know, sometimes students feel dumb or stupid or unworthy, but I always encourage my students to work hard on their strengths and work hard on their weaknesses. When I was a principal, I always encouraged my teachers to think like this. The question is not, are you smart? The question is, how are you smart? And mm-hmm. I like to repeat that. The question is not, are you smart? The question is, how are you smart? There are seven kinds of intelligences, and academics is only one of the seven. So sometimes a student might struggle academically, but they excel in art or music or athleticism. And when I was teaching, I always tried to look at each individual student's strengths, and I tried to encourage their efforts. And when they succeeded, I really experienced joy as my own personal reward.
You know, Becky, I love that way of thinking because I believe that that contributes to a lot of the behavior in our young people in schools. That
I agree with that.
Yeah, they are not engaged in what interests them or in their way of learning or whatever, and that causes acting out behaviors.
Yes, you're right about that. Just engaging students where they are and what their interests are, you know, that I strongly believe that we need to apply that when it comes to children's reading, because oftentimes students are given books that they need to read and they're not interested in that. And I know mm-hmm. sometimes there's, you know, mandated curriculum and such, but I think it's especially important in the home to find the books and the subject matter that means something to the kids, something that they're interested in. And I think about little boys, and if they're interested in robots or building airplanes or soccer, you know, moms and dads need to look for those books at the library, mm-hmm. and that will really contribute to their desire to read.
Exactly. I agree with that. Yeah, my son was fairly tall. He was over 6 feet tall, so of course the basketball coach was just looking at him, you know, with eyes that said, come join my team, you know, and he tried it and he was horrible at it. So, but one of his strong points was video gaming, which I wasn't real thrilled that he was super involved in that. But now the career that he has pursued, he's in video conferencing and doing very well in that field.
Oh, that's
so
awesome.
You just never know. Yep.
That's right. That's where he was going to land for his successes.
Yeah. Well, as you know, Becky, and as I brought up at the beginning of our show, education has evolved over the years from compulsory education and way back to the one-room schoolhouse through our public school system, and now we have homeschooling and we have online educational opportunities and we have all these things. What are some of the most important elements of education that we need to preserve for our children through all of these changes that have taken place?
Patty, I believe there are two elements to preserve. In my opinion, the first element is retaining the basics of education with the reading, writing, and arithmetic skills. Mm-hmm. Now, I know that might seem like a very simplistic answer, maybe even a lame answer, but I honestly feel this way, no matter what path of education parents choose for their child, I believe the basic skills with reading, writing, and arithmetic will always be necessary, even in our day and age of technology, for students to be successful and to be successful adults in the working fields. Patty, I also believe these basics should not be watered down or lessened. I feel pretty strongly about good writing skills. And especially with today's texting and instant messaging,
oh, yeah.
Today's students are losing good basic writing skills. So All the more reason for teachers to be emphasizing good writing skills in the classroom. And for arithmetic, I was in a McDonald's a few years ago, and the computers were momentarily down. And the young man who helped me did not have any math skills to do subtraction to know how much change to return to me. So
exactly.
In other words, students today can let a computer do the math for them. But I believe those basic math skills should still be intact in our young students today. Patty, I believe the second element to preserve is character education. Now, many of our private schools offer Bible lessons, and the field is certainly wide open for character education lessons mm-hmm. from a biblical perspective. And certainly the homeschooling path is very open as well. And I am pleased that there are trends for character education in our public school systems today, as well as online educational opportunities. I believe in the last 20 years or so, more and more public schools have recognized a need to instill values into our students. And oftentimes,
yes.
Public schools are offering intentional curriculum and character education lessons. The values of honesty, integrity, dedication, empathy, compassion, and respect, and Patty, just having good manners are
Absolutely.
Important traits to instill in our young people today, no matter what religious faiths are practiced.
I'm into that. I agree 100%, Becky. I think you answered that question very thoroughly, and I thank you for that answer, Becky. With the choices that parents do have today, what are some criteria that they can look at in their child to determine the best educational experience for that particular child? Because maybe not all kids, even from the same family, learn in the same manner or even have those same needs. So is there kind of a measuring stick to help them determine, well, this child should probably be in a charter school, or this child would do fine in public school, or this one needs online courses maybe?
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts
on Patty.
That?
Yes, Patty. Yes. First of all, I totally agree with you that even children in the same family can have their own individualized needs. So I believe first and foremost that parents should always put the child first. And one example of this, Patty, is if your child has a late birthday, perhaps even falling past the cutoff date for kindergarten,
I
think it's good to view this situation that you have more time with your child before formal education starts. And with a lot of working parents and the cost of traditional daycares, and sometimes parents might try to push forward to get their child in school to avoid another year of daycare or babysitting costs, but really, this is to the detriment of their child. The school I was involved in before retirement, the Classical Academy in Colorado Springs, encourages parents to view late summer birthdays as a gift of time. And studies show that students are more successful later on if they start school on the later side.
Yes.
I also believe it's important to view each child in the family individually. And like you said, Patty, one path of education may not work for all the children in the same family. It's not always a cookie cutter plan. And with all the options out there, I do believe it's possible for the children in the same family to receive their education on different paths. I know this happened in my own family, and I have known other families that maybe two children are enrolled in a public school while another child is homeschooled, or maybe another child is enrolled in an online program. But I think it's always wise for parents to assess the individual needs of their children. And then, Patty, I also think it's important for parents to assess their chosen educational paths for their children every year. In other words, as children grow up, sometimes a particular challenge may arise. It could even be a medical challenge or a learning disability that surfaces later on. So I believe it's wise to always consider what educational path is best for that child, even if it means disenrolling from the current plan and considering a new plan. Mm-hmm. And once again, I'd like to emphasize always put the child first.
And meet those individual needs of each one.
Absolutely.
Well, that certainly makes sense. That certainly makes a lot of sense to me, Becky. I know
yes.
my sister
yes.
and I, for example, I took back, 100 years ago when we went to school. I took all the academic stuff because I was going to go into nursing. And she just didn't do well in the academics at all. She went the business route. And our level of understanding was just entirely different. And that doesn't mean that she was any less of a student than me or that I was any more of a student than her, but that's just the way it was. And as it turned out, she ended up doing a career in the Air Force, which was great for her. So
amazing example, Patty. Yeah, that's what it's all about, is just that individualized plan.
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, and there are so many options out there. Oh, my goodness. I mean, back in the day, you never heard of such a thing as a parent homeschooling a child at home. I don't think that even existed back then, or if it did, there certainly wasn't the parameters that there are now for that, because I know homeschool parents have to follow certain guidelines and so such, and their students need to meet certain state criteria, I believe. Isn't that true?
Yes, that's true. They have to follow the state guidelines, the state requirements.
Right. Well, shoot, I went to school in New York, and back there, the big thing, I don't think people even could care less about it now, but I graduated with a Regents diploma. That was big stuff.
Well, that sure was.
You took a Regents exam in all of your courses, and you got these scores, and you graduated with a Regents diploma, and that was really big stuff. I don't think there's an employer in the country that asks for a Regents diploma today. They couldn't care less.
You're probably right. Yeah.
Just goes to show how things have changed over the years.
Well, yes, Becky, they really have.
Exactly. Imagine the one-room schoolroom, how much fun that would have been to teach in back in the day.
Yes, I think so. I would have liked it.
Do you really think you would have?
Yeah, I do. I do, because normally the one-room schoolhouses had a smaller enrollment, and a lot of children from the same family came, and I think you could get to know them. And I really believe in older students helping the younger students, and I'm sure it had its challenges, no doubt about that. But when I think about the structure of that, I think I would have enjoyed it.
It probably would have been quite a bit of fun and a challenge and interesting. Well, Becky, I think at this point we're going to take a short break. I kind of like to make listeners aware that you're listening to Step Into the Light, and I am honored today to have guest Becky Van Fleet, who is a retired educator and also an author and a blogger. So far, we've been talking about education and some of the choices that parents have in education and what they should look for as far as making those choices for the educational path of their children. Becky can be found on several of the social media sites, of course, like we'll talk about coming up. She has started a blog. She can be found on Facebook and LinkedIn and Instagram. And I will be putting those links up on my website, which is PattySheene.com. When you go to that website, you will find at the top of the page a tab that says Blog Talk Radio. When you click on that, you will get a list of all of our shows that we have recorded to date. And, of course, Becky's will be at the top this week. And under that tab will be a more information button, and you can press that, and that's where you will find links to all of Becky's information. Also, I would ask that if you enjoy the show, that you share it with others, that you recommend it to other folks. You're free to download it and all that good stuff. So I think she has some really valuable information to offer, not only about education today, but coming up, we're going to talk about some things that she has done in the way of encouraging people to make memories and preserve those memories for family. So I think she's got a lot to offer. So let's get back to our interview here. Becky, how can Christian parents, yourself, as society is becoming increasingly secular, especially in our school systems, how can we preserve those Christian values in our children?
Patty, this is a great question. You know, I believe instilling Christian values in our young people today starts in the home to begin with. And if parents can find a school that further facilitates these values, then I say so much the better. But as I think about this question, my answer really will be for all parents and all school environments. First, I would say to be very involved in the public school your child attends. I think that working parents, both moms and dads, can usually find creative ways to be in their child's school. I would also say it's important for parents to walk the talk. Your children are watching. Their moral compasses are developing in these younger years, and they are paying attention to how you handle challenges in life. Patty, we live in a fast-paced society, but I would say to slow it down a bit, to share a Bible verse at breakfast before the kids walk out the door, or start breakfast with a prayer, and let your children know that you are praying for their teachers. And yes, I know children spend a great deal of time out of the home and in the classroom, but I would say to make the most of the time that you do have with your children when they are at home, that you need to continually emphasize, reteach your Christian values. I think about the commission we are given in Deuteronomy chapter 6, where the Israelites are given God's statutes and judgments and commandments in their first few verses. And then the greatest commandment of all follows, where we are told in verse 6 to love the Lord our God with all our heart, all our soul, and with all of our strength. And then in the verses to follow, the author of Deuteronomy, Moses, gives us a beautiful commission from God that I'd like to read. I have my Old Testament open right now. Moses says, "And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up." So, Patty, right there is your breakfast prayer or Bible verse. You mm-hmm. shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. I love this Old Testament commission. And as I mentioned earlier, to walk the talk, I'd also like to say that you can switch these words to talk the walk. And I believe when Moses says to teach these precepts diligently to our children, and he specifically gives all these times and ways to do so, I believe this is talking the walk. And also, Patty, I can't emphasize enough the power of prayer. I would encourage all parents to pray for your child and to remember, for your child to remember your Christian teachings and values when they are at school, out of your home. I would say pray that the biblical precepts that you are instilling will override secular values that seep into their environments outside of the home that may not go along with what you believe in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that 100%, Becky, because there's such strong influences on all fronts for these kids today.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and I just think that the power of prayer is just, we can't do that enough. It's very important.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that. Well, thank you very much for that answer, Becky. That was very enlightening. And I'd like to tie in actually the second part of our show with what you said. Tell us about your blog and what the theme of that blog is and how that ties into what you have just discussed.
Okay. First of all, Patty, the definition of a blog is the shortening of the term weblog. And these are usually an online journal where writers share their views on an individual subject. I just started my own website a few weeks ago, and I currently only have 8 blogs. And I'm calling my short writing blogs, but I don't know that they really are traditional blogs. Some of them fall closer to a devotional, while others I'm sharing about some of my family's traditions and memories. So that tagline or theme of my website is where creating and preserving memories happen. So this is what I'm writing about. And Patty, this is what I'm passionate about. And I have based this theme on the book of Esther in the Old Testament, chapter 9. Once again, I have my Bible open, and I'll read a couple of verses from this passage. It became a tradition for them, their children, and all future converts to remember these 2 days every year on the specified dates set down in the letter. These days are to be remembered and kept by every single generation, every last family, every province and city. These days of Purim must never be neglected among the Jews. The memory of them must never die out among their descendants. So, Patty, the context of these verses is about the beautiful story of Queen Esther and her courage and her careful planning to step out in faith for her people and to save their lives. And today, some 2,500 years later, the Jewish people are still celebrating Purim, the Jewish holiday that really Queen Esther started. And if you Google the Purim holiday, you will read some very interesting facts about how this Jewish holiday is still celebrated today by Jews all over the world. It's really very fascinating.
It's quite amazing,
too. All this
too.
To say, yes. So all this to say, I personally am a big believer in family traditions and creating memories and preserving them for future generations. So I have been writing about my own personal experiences in my blogs. And if any of your listeners enjoy this kind of thing, I'd really love for them to share their own ideas on my website. Patty, okay. Each blog has a place for comments.
Well, I think that's really, really neat, Becky. I know I had my mom sent me a gift for Christmas 1 year, and it was a unique gift that a friend of hers had made. She and my dad were living in a retirement apartment building by then, and this lady had made a Christmas tree, and it was made out of, I don't know, these little pieces of, like, see-through bead things and safety pins, but it had a string of Christmas lights all through it. It was an amazing little thing. And that became one of our traditions to put that in our window every year. And it
love to hear traditions like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it kind of broke my heart when I went to get it out of the garage 1 year and the mice had gotten to it and had totally destroyed all, you know, the electrical stuff. And, you know, there was no way to fix it. So, yeah, I cried hard over that.
Oh, that's a shame. But I do, Patty, I love to hear traditions like that. And, you know, if we keep those traditions, we usually have stories that we can share about it.
You know, Becky, the premise of this show here is to help people who have been in a dark place find their way back to light. So I'm going to ask you, do you feel that there is a way that preserving and sharing memories can lead people from dark times back to light?
You know, Patty, as I think about this, I can't say that there is a real obvious way, but what I will say is that each new generation can learn from the past generations. There are numerous examples in the New Testament that Christ's followers were still learning from the prophets and judges in the Old Testament. And the New Testament writers referred to the prophets and patriarchs and kings often, not just about their successes, but also about their failures, so that righteous living could be encouraged. So I would say that today, baby boomers, for example, can preserve and share memories with their children and grandchildren to encourage righteous living. Patty, we can share our stories with the next generations where they can learn from our failures, but they can also learn from the truth, goodness, and beauty that we experienced. And we can encourage them to live in the light with our stories of failures and victories.
Well, I guess from a personal experience, the times that memories have been important for me, and you probably haven't experienced this yet, and I hope you don't for a long time, but my husband passed 3 years ago. And I was going through just stuff in a drawer, and I came across something, Becky, I had never even seen it before. I don't know how it got in my filing drawer, but it was an old registration for my husband's 1973 Ford Torino that he owned when I first moved to Colorado when I first met him.
Uh-huh.
And also, it was the credit union contract where he had applied for the loan, which was all of $1,200.
Uh-huh.
Can you imagine $1,200?
Oh,
for
goodness.
And I kept that. And I thought, you know, I am going to keep this, whether my kids decide to keep it or not. I don't know. But to me, that was just such a precious memory because it brought back just so many memories of him and that car and everything, you know. And you come across silly things like that after someone has passed, and they become so important.
Uh huh. You're
to me,
right.
And
Patty,
that's to my day, you know.
Yes. And Patty, I would say when you find something like that, don't hesitate to share the story behind it. Your kids will enjoy that. They really will. You know, to just share the memories of, this is when I met your dad, and and look at this. You know, with the passage of time, what the difference in prices are these days, and just talk about
exactly.
It and share those memories and stories.
Yes.
That's good. That's good for the generations after us to hear.
Mm-hmm. Becky, I'm excited to talk to you about your book, and it is a children's book, and is entitled Talitha, the Traveling Skirt. So tell us about the book and the motivation behind this little story.
Oh, yes, Patty. I would love to share with you the motivation behind this sweet little story. Talitha, the Traveling Skirt is my first picture book to be published, and it was just released the end of August. I'd like to say first that this book is based on a true family story. We have had a little skirt traveling in my family for more than 70 years. So it's been spanning three generations as it has been traveling around. And at first, I decided I'd like to write a family memoir about this traveling skirt because I wanted to preserve the tradition and the memory within my own family. But as I started writing the memoir, a vision began to form within me to take a leap and write a fun story for publication for other readers to enjoy. And just to give you a little background, my mother, Alberta, had a teenage friend named Omadine. And when they lived in a rural town in southern Indiana before World War II, they were good friends, just typical teenagers. I have a picture of both of them at age 15 on my website with one of my blogs. But anyway, both of the girls later married their World War II sweethearts and moved to Indianapolis after the war, and they stayed in touch with each other. In fact, Omadine was in my mother's wedding. So
wow.
In 1948, my oldest sister was 2 years old, and my mother's friend Omadine made this cute little red plaid skirt with straps for my parents' oldest daughter, my sister Nancy. Well, my mother saved the little skirt, and along came three more daughters in the next few years. I was daughter number three. So my mother had saved this little skirt, and she had all four of us to wear this at age 2 for a professional picture. And I don't know if this was my mother's idea or the photographer's idea, but all four of us have our left legs crossed over our right legs in a certain pose.
Oh, for heaven's
and
sake.
And, Patty, you might, I know, it's just really neat. You might remember at this time pictures were in the brownish tones and just really quite lovely, I think, at that time. But my mother displayed all four of these pictures through the years on top of our piano. And when people would come into our home to visit, they would make comments about these pictures. And my mother would talk about her friend Omadine and how she had made this little skirt and how it had become a tradition for all of us to be photographed at the age of 2 wearing the skirt. Well, as time went along, my sisters and I began to marry and have our own children, and we kept the tradition going, much to my mother's delight. However, my mother only lived long enough to see two of the first three granddaughters that were born wear the skirt and have their pictures taken. But my dad lived long enough to see all eight of his granddaughters have their picture taken in this little skirt before he passed away. So he saw all of the second generation get their pictures taken. So I'll go on, Patty, to the next generation. When the grandchildren began to marry and have their own children, my sisters and I encouraged our daughters to keep the tradition going. And sure enough, they did for the third generation.
Wow.
So my sisters and I, through the years, we've kept close tabs on the skirt because our family has scattered around, and the little skirt has to travel on airplanes to reach all the little girls in our family these days for their second birthdays. So we're always making sure that the skirt is safe, and we try not to wash it because it is so old. It's more than 70 years old.
Yes.
And Patty, I've had people to ask, did you ever have any little boys born into your family? And of course we did. But it was the little girls that kept this tradition going, and that skirt became meaningful to all of us. And here's the good thing, Patty. This is really special. Oma Dean, who made the skirt, is still living. She is 94.
My. Oh.
Yes. She is 94. And I shared with her about a year ago that I was working on writing a children's book about the skirt that she made for my oldest sister, Nancy. And she was so excited to know this. So in the last year or more, probably 14 or 15 months, I just prayed that she would live long enough for my book to get published. And sure enough, she did. So when I got my hands on my own book, Patty, for the first time, I immediately mailed her a copy of it. So about 3 weeks ago, we talked on the phone about the book and the skirt, and I can't tell you how thrilled she is. She absolutely had no idea that when she sewed this little skirt in 1948 for my mother and dad and their first little daughter, that the skirt would eventually become famous, I would say, because it began to play an important tradition in our family, and this little skirt got a book written about it.
Story.
Yeah, I know Omidy never envisioned a book. And quite honestly, Patty, the publication of this children's book was really a fun and meaningful endeavor for me.
Oh, I'm so glad that it just turned out so, it just means so much to everybody involved.
It really does. It really does.
Oh, wow, that is neat. I wonder how much longer it will, you know, it'll stand up to the tradition, that it won't fall apart after 70 years. That's
Amazingly, the fabric is very good, and the colors are bright. It's a pleated skirt. The pleats are intact, and it's just, I wish I could show it to you, Patty. It's in very good shape, very good shape. But like I said, we're trying not to wash it. We don't want it to get in poor condition just through a washing.
Right, and I'm sure it's probably just worn for the picture. I mean, you don't send your little one out to play in it.
Yeah, right. These days, it's just worn for the picture. Right.
Yeah. Oh, that is just so cool. That is just the neatest story. Thank you for sharing that with us, Becky.
Yes. I love to talk about it.
Oh, I'm sure you do, and I don't blame you. It's just such a unique story. I think that's what makes it so fun, is it is so unique. Tell us, does your story have any biblical tie-ins?
You know, yes, Patty, I would say yes, because I named the personified skirt Talitha. And if you read the passage in Mark chapter 5 in the New Testament, this is about Jesus raising Jairus' daughter from the dead. And Jairus was a synagogue leader, and he asks Jesus to come to his home to heal his very sick daughter. And Jesus is very willing to do so. However, as he travels to Jairus's home, a throng of people are following him, as usually is the case, and Jesus along the way ends up healing a woman who had a blood disease. And so we have the inference that there was a bit of time before Jesus actually arrived at Jairus's home. And in the meantime, there were others in the synagogue that got word that Jairus's daughter had passed away. So they said, forget it, leave Jesus alone, she's already dead. But Jesus pressed on anyway. And when he gets to Jairus's home, he tells everyone to stay outside except for the little girl's parents and a few close followers. So when he goes into the house, he finds the dead girl, he takes her hand, and he says, Talitha kumai. And this is translated to mean, little girl, I say to you, arise. And of course, this wonderful miracle brings life back into this young girl. And Patty, I believe I first learned about this story many years ago in one of my childhood Sunday school classes, and I never forgot this story. And since Talitha means little girl, and my book is about two-year-old little girls, it was quite meaningful for me to use that name.
Yes, most definitely. I can certainly see that tie. What kind of, you know, when you write a book, everybody asks you, what's the takeaway in your book? What do you think young readers will learn from your story, Becky?
Well, this picture book is geared for ages 3 to 8. And I believe the children's takeaways will be family life, family traditions, hand-me-downs, and the characteristics and behaviors of two-year-olds. And when I say hand-me-downs, I know, Patty, some children may not even know what that term means. But as a read-aloud, I believe the parent or the grandparent or the teacher or whoever is reading this book aloud can explain that concept. And I personified the little skirt to be the main character of the book. So Talitha experiences some conflicts. She even becomes afraid to be washed, and she thinks about how one time she was lost. And so I think children will understand that Talitha overcame her fears and she overcame her conflicts. And at the end, this little skirt feels loved and safe, and she feels like she belongs with her family. I would say as a side note, I had a wonderful illustrator, Courtney Smith. And I actually had a piece of the story about a dog, and I named the dog Tippy because we actually had a dog named Tippy in my family when I was very young. But I actually had just one section pertaining to the dog. But Courtney, with her expertise as an illustrator and with her great vision that she had, she made Tippy to become a part of the whole story in the illustrations. And so the children will not only enjoy seeing this little skirt traveling and seeing the little girls and all the experiences that this little skirt has, they will also enjoy seeing the dog. The dog continues throughout the story. And Courtney also depicted the passage of time with the traveling skirt. She included a 1948 calendar on the first page. And as the story continues, she illustrates the aging of the photographer, the aging of mother, and the cameras, how the cameras changed and so forth. So I think the children will enjoy and learn just from the illustrations with the passage of time.
Passage of time and how things change. Oh, that sounds wonderful. Wow, you have really created quite a story there, Becky, and you have just brought forth such a message. It just sounds absolutely wonderful. I may have to get a copy of that book to read myself and donate to our local library.
Oh, Patty, that would be wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah, yes. Well, Becky, do you have another writing project in mind, or was this kind of a one-time thing? Do you see yourself now as a writer or not really?
That's a good question. I started out, it was going to be a one-time thing. It really was. But I think the writing bug bit me, And, you know, I've actually got three different writing projects going on, and they're all different. I'm not sure which one will emerge first, but I'm pondering some ideas for a companion book for my Talitha book. And then I'm also doing some research on the USS Denver, which was a World War II light cruiser in the Pacific.
Yes.
My father was on this ship for nearly 3 years, and I have always been fascinated with his stories about his adventures upon this ship and the battles he participated in World War II. So I'm contemplating writing a young adult book about my father and the USS Denver. And,
great.
Patty, I hope to not only highlight his adventures, but I hope to also highlight the many good character traits in his story with courage, perseverance, and patriotism. The third possibility is that I'm also doing research on life in Poland in the early 1900s. My paternal grandmother immigrated to the United States right after World War I, and she has quite the story. So at this point, I'm enjoying my research and my reflection and my prayer time about all three of these possibilities. And like I said, I'm not sure which book idea will emerge first, but I'm enjoying the process.
Well, wonderful. It sounds like you have some really exciting projects lined up there, Becky. Good for you.
Thank you, Patty.
Is there anything else you'd like to talk about today that you're thinking, man, I wish she had asked me that question and she didn't? Or
okay.
Anything more you'd like to expound on relating to things that we have discussed today?
Yeah, you know, Patty, you have really asked some very great thought-provoking questions, which I really appreciate.
Oh,
and I don't think I can add more, but I'll just close on my end by encouraging the listeners to think about the importance of creating memories and preserving them in your family. And there's so many ways that you can do that. I'd love for your listeners to look up my website. And if anybody likes Pinterest, oh my goodness, there's so many ideas on Pinterest for preserving family memories. And I just think that's important for each generation's voice to be carried to the next generation.
Yes, I would definitely agree with that, Becky. And I want to thank you so much for your time, for sharing with us about memories and creating memories and preserving memories and the insight that you gave us into education and some of the experiences that what some of your experiences have taught you. And I just want to thank you for a really great show. And I certainly appreciate you coming on today.
Okay, thank you, Patty, for this time, and I wish you the very best with your podcast and especially with your messages of getting out of darkness and getting into the light.
Well, thank you, and may God bless you, and may God bless your writing endeavors.
Okay, thank you, Patty, and God bless you.
To our listeners, I thank you so much for spending time with us today, and I hope that you will go to the more information tab and learn some more about Becky. Definitely visit her website and read her blogs and connect with her on Facebook and her other social media outlets. And remember that you're welcome to download any of the shows that we have on the pattysheen.com, which is pattishene.com website. In closing, when you look back on the dark periods in your life, you may find they were not quite as dark as they seemed at the time. And when the light does shine again, it is so much brighter than you remembered. God bless you. Hope you join us next time.
There is a candle in every soul. Some brightly burning, some dark and cold. There is a spirit who brings a fire, ignites a candle.